Republic Yemeni number one.
What's that?
I forgot my trays in my mouth.
You know you're on fucking camera saying that right now. You know that Tarek doesn't. That's it. Now you got to keep the trays in. No. Do them in front of the camera so everyone can see, bro. But come on, bro. You narcissist.
I got these
Invisaligns. Uh-huh. Damn, bro. You are really, really all about your fucking like image, man. Like
my teeth.
Bro, there's a microphone. Pick up the microphone.
It's my teeth. You can never go wrong with your teeth. It's a very important part of life. Your teeth go bad, you look old.
Yeah, you sound like a dentist. You sound like you're selling dentistry work.
Yeah, you look old, bro. Look at your teeth.
Fuck you, man. My teeth look nice. Look, guys. Look at that. I didn't have to do shit with these teeth. No Invisalign or anything. This guy with the...
I had straight teeth.
You know what? I didn't...
I was grinding.
Oh, you know, I have to wear a mouth guard now. I have to when I sleep. Because now I'm starting to grind my teeth in my sleep.
Yeah, you don't want to grind them. That's what happens.
That's so fucking weird. I remember when I went to the dentist, and he was like, yeah, you're grinding your teeth. I'm like, no, I'm not. What the fuck are you talking about?
I said I was like that too.
You got to put the microphone closer to you.
I was like that as well.
This is why I want you to have the headphones. You don't want to do the headphones, though.
We're good.
Okay. Just make sure you kind of keep it close, you know, because I don't want me to be too loud and then you not.
Okay, where were we? Start like you were about
what
to
were we talking about? Because I said, we might as well just start it right now.
Something. He's doing your intro on you or something like that.
The intro's done. I'm not doing that no more. I ended up starting this just a little bit early because there's another guy on here named Tarek Salamasi. Do you know him?
Is there?
Because as soon as I posted that you're doing this, some guy named Tarek Salamasi added me on Instagram.
Maybe it was me.
It wasn't.
Are you sure? Oh, my nephew?
Maybe. Yeah, Gucci. He said, "Ayo,
oh, yeah, it's
Gucci.
It's my nephew.
Is that your nephew?"
Gucci. As he's saying, Gucci.
It's Gucci. What's Gucci? What's it? Oh, he's just saying Gucci.
Remember Gucci, man?
Yeah.
He's always going, Gucci.
Yeah, Gucci. Okay, yeah, I get it. Yeah, no, I thought maybe that was his nickname or some shit. No.
What's up, nephew?
Okay, don't talk too loud, bro.
What's up, nephew?
There you go. Yeah, bro, we were just talking about something. The reason why I started it. What the hell were we talking about?
Hey, don't you feel bad for my nephew? He's got my name.
Do I feel what?
Bad for my nephew. He's got my name. Because now if anybody wants to Google him, he can't Google himself.
Yeah, but I don't think he cares about himself as much as you care about yourself.
I don't know about
him. He might be a different Tarek Salamasi. He might be a Tarek Salamasi that's more focused on like building things, you know, instead of putting Invisalign in his fucking teeth. And then hiding off camera to take them off and shit.
No, I don't want to like on camera.
So what?
Spit hanging out.
Did that happen?
Nah, but you never know.
But you're worried.
You never know. Mike Eshek in the house.
Yeah, I fucking love you, Tarek, bro. Gotta be careful with the levels, bro. With the levels, man. Yeah.
Mike Eshek is in Cali. He's in Detroit. He's all around the country doing his thing.
Yeah.
I just seen him last week in L.A.
That was fun, man. It's funny. I hang out with you, and then like we'll just be hanging out with celebrities and shit. We hung out with DJ Paul from 3-6 Mafia.
Yeah,
he was cool as fuck, man.
He's good people. I've known him for like 15 years, more than that. Yeah, about 15 years.
How'd you guys get to know each other?
Going back, you know what? Right after I did The Contender.
Yeah.
There was the American Music Awards. I met him at the hotel for the gift. There was a gift suite at the hotel. Ever tell you that story?
I think so, but I know. Let's talk about it again for the podcast. But I think you might have told me about this. So this is like the area that they give free gifts to the celebrities.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This is where you like get that microphone close to your face, bro.
Go,
man. We got to get you a microphone, homie. I mean,
No. Come on.
I know you don't want it, but
I got you.
Okay.
This way.
And also, be careful with doing this. You're doing this a lot.
Okay.
Like you're like about.
Oh, it makes a noise.
Yeah, you know, you're doing that thing with your hand, like you're about to box. okay, so you met DJ Paul at a gift giving banquet area, sort of like the area where you go to get your gifts.
Yeah, they have a room like at one of those hotels in LA. Day before the American Music Awards, celebrities go, it's a gift suite.
Yeah.
They give them all kinds of free shit, you know, like different companies and all that.
Yeah.
And I was staying at the hotel and I'm walking out. I didn't even know what was going on there. I didn't know there was a gift suite there. I'm walking out. I remember seeing 3-6 Mafia walking in. And I was a fan of their show. They used to have reality shows. Hilarious. I was like, yo, 3-6 Mafia, what's up, bro? You know, start talking, bullshitting, hanging, talking, whatever. Like, what are you guys here for? Man, there's a gift suite upstairs. I go, what? Gift suite? I didn't know about no gift suite. Oh, come on, I'm going with you guys. I go, don't worry about it, bro. Let me take care of this. They go, okay. So we go up there. And now when you walk into the gift suite, you got to give the person at the door your name.
Yeah.
Then you announce it. Come in the door, 3-6 Mafia from, you know, and every people see him come in the door. They give him gifts.
So they announce you as you come through the door.
Yeah, they announce you, right?
So how embarrassing.
So 3-6
I would just fucking tell them, don't fucking call my name, you fucking piece of shit.
Relax, bro. It's free stuff. So anyway.
Just give me the free stuff.
So anyway.
I'll send my assistant in there.
They go, they announce 3-6 Mafia, yeah, then I walk up now. They go, who are you? Name? I give my name. Yeah. You're on the list.
You're not on the list?
From Contender. Yeah, I did the Contender reality show. Well, I don't know. Let me talk to my manager. She goes and talks to her manager. Her manager comes out. She's like, I go, she's walking with her manager. Looks, oh my God. She goes, I love that show. Let him in. Let him in. They announce they're coming through the door. It's Tariq Salaman. I go, and the 3-6 Mafia is cracking up. I'm like, yeah, I told you, bro. No, I got you.
I got you. I went around. What do you mean? I got you. Yeah. You act like you got them in.
No, you know what I mean? So I went through the whole thing, duffel bags full of stuff. Boom, we left it. They're like, let's go. We got another gift suite we're going to go to. Jumped in the car with them, went to the next one, and that was it. It was good times.
Yeah.
He's good people, though, man.
You're a bull in a china shop, bro.
A what?
You're a bull in a china shop.
What else is supposed to be in a china shop?
Not Chinese people.
Huh? A bull?
You're a bull in a china shop. You never heard that? Not a bull. No, a bull.
A bull.
Bro, you're wearing these headphones.
I can hear you.
No, you're fucking no.
I can't understand what you're saying. No, I'm not doing it.
You can't hear yourself.
No, you're saying bull.
No. Put this on here. Put this. It has nothing to do with you not hearing. It
has everything to do with you putting your microphone away from your face.
Let me see. Testing 1, 2.
This,
testing,
just, oh, yeah. So, do you know how to wear headphones?
Testing 1, 2.
Okay. All right. So, a bull in a china shop. A bull.
Okay.
In a china shop. You never heard that term before?
No, but what's a bull going to be doing in a china shop?
You're asking, what is a bull doing in a china shop? That's exactly the fucking saying.
Oh, man.
You see what I'm saying?
Wah, wah, wah.
It's a term basically saying that, like, you know, I get that. People tell me that all the time, you know? They tell me that I'm a bull in a china shop because, like...
You're different.
Well, I think that... We're just, especially you, like, we make our way in. We don't care about formalities. You know what I mean? So, like, while everybody else is playing this delicate game, people like me and you just come in and we're like, what are you doing?
It's too hot.
It's too hot?
Right.
I'm just worried.
No, I won't. I got it now.
Yeah, you just got to keep the microphone close.
I got it. So, go ahead.
So, yeah, a bull in a china shop, basically... Somebody who's not as delicate in a delicate situation, right? So, like, there's a set of rules. Like, you know, you only come in here if you are that celebrity, right? But you're just like, where are you guys going? Oh, 3-6 Mafia, I fucking love you guys, bro. What are you guys doing? You going to get shot? I didn't fucking hear about a gift shop. I'm offended. What the fuck is this shit? Come on, I didn't get fucking no gifts. I'm rolling with you guys. And they're all like, what? And that's not normal. You know what I mean? Most people would probably be like, oh, man, you know, I probably shouldn't impede. You know, they probably get hit. They probably get like so many people advancing on them, annoying them or whatever. But you have a way of breaking that rule, and then you break that rule. But then everybody can't help but love you because you're just like a lovable dude. You know what I'm saying? Like as soon as you come in, you're like, what the fuck? This guy's like. Breaking protocol. Hey. He's breaking protocol.
It's called entitlement.
It's
an era problem.
It is. Well, you know what?
I was born with it.
That me too, bro. after being
I'm not going to wait in this line.
Yeah, wallah. Or those like me and you, we're the type of people when we drive up onto an exit and there's a long line for the exit, we don't go in the back of that line.
We'll take the long way.
No.
We'll take the longest way.
No, I don't do the long way. I just keep passing that fucking line until I see. You can tell. You can usually tell who. You can tell somebody up there is texting.
Oh, you cut in.
You know, and you can tell. That white geo tracker, that guy there is texting because I can see from a big, he's leaving big gaps. So sooner or later, that car in front of him is going to move and he's going to be like too busy and boom, that's when you get in. And another way to do it is you find somebody who already cut. If you go in front of him and ask him, more than likely he's going to let you cut because he already cut. Right, Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's bull in a china shop type shit. Everyone's playing this protocol. And people like you and I, especially you, are like, protocol? Fuck protocol. I got charisma, bitch.
I follow protocol. Yeah. I think I do.
You didn't then. That story was not protocol. You did not follow protocol.
But you know what? Because I was
getting, you weren't that celebrity. But then you became that celebrity.
At the time, I was in my prime with the boxing. I was getting invited to all these other shows, award shows, ESPYs, all that stuff. But this one, for some reason, I didn't know about it. So it just happened to be at my hotel. I was like, gifts? I go, there's no way I'm missing out on gifts.
Yeah. Man, is that where you met Usher and you got that really cool picture with Usher and Paris Hilton?
That was actually...
Was it there? Was that on like a red carpet or some shit?
The Usher, I met him at a Super Bowl party after the Super Bowl. It was a Sony PlayStation party they were having. And I ran to him there and he was a fan of the show as well.
Yeah?
It's nice. Cool guy.
Yeah.
Cool guy. He had a booth, chilled for a minute.
You talk for a minute?
Yeah, he's a cool guy, man.
How long did you hang out with him? About 30 seconds?
A little longer.
43?
Maybe like 32 and a half, 33 maybe.
Was he like bombarded by a lot of people?
No, man. This is because it was more of a private event, so nobody bothered these guys. It's more of a private invite thing, so everyone in there kind of knows each other.
Oh, okay. But he had his own booth?
It wasn't at a public place. It was more like a private party. Yeah, they gave him a little table.
Oh, you mean he had like a table?
Yeah, what are you talking about?
When you say, well, I'm sorry. For a second there, when you said he had a booth, I thought it was some type of a convention where he was like,
a booth is the old school. Where he had, back in the day,
where he had a table, you had a booth. You had a booth. Got it. Okay. We're talking about bottle service type shit.
Yeah.
I'm thinking like he's at a convention and he's hustling his CDs. Hey, guys, have you heard of me? Bro, Usher, that motherfucker doesn't age. You ever notice that?
Yeah, I know.
Like, he must be eating, like, dead fetuses or some shit. Because that's where you get a lot of stem cells. It's from fetuses. That's where they get a lot of stem cells from.
From where?
From, like, aborted fetuses.
What are you, nuts, bro?
I'm not nuts. Well, why are you getting mad at me for telling you real information? What do you mean, where am I getting from? It's real. It's just a thing. It's a thing. It's a thing. Like, even back when George W. Bush was president, he went out of his way to outlaw that because... You know, him being Christian and everything, he's like, no, that should be against the law to use aborted baby fetuses for stem cells. You know what stem cells are?
Oh, for the stem cells. It's nothing wrong with that.
But some people have a moral problem with it. Some people, especially people who are very religious and they don't believe in abortion.
Yeah, I can see that.
They don't like that because, one, they think it's a sin. And then, two, they think that it's just going to incentivize more people to get abortions because then the people who could be pro-abortion be like, hey, at least you can get stem cells from the thing. But I mean, do you know what stem cells are, though?
Of course.
They're like cells that can like turn into any cell.
Of course.
Yeah. I'm thinking about getting some injected in my neck. I'm going to meet a doctor tomorrow about it.
Will you have bad neck?
Yeah. Like right now I got like these two discs over here are like compressed and it's touching a nerve. And if I sleep, because I'm a side sleeper, sometimes I'll wake up with like numbing pains in my arms and it disrupts my sleep, bro. And I'm not fucking with that anymore. You know what I mean? I need to fucking sleep good. You feel me?
When are you doing it?
Put it closer, man.
When are you doing the operation?
This whole podcast is going to be...
surgery, whatever you're
doing. Put it closer. I should get like transcripts. I'm going to want to like... I guess I'm going to transcribe it.
When are you doing the stem cell?
I don't know. I'm going to have a consultation tomorrow and then I'm going to see if it's something that I want to do, you know, because I want to see how much it is. To me, bro, $10,000, $15,000, I'm fucking dishing it out. I don't give a fuck, bro. Nothing is more valuable than sleep, man.
Well, your health, yeah, in general.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Sleep, health starts with sleep.
Of course.
You know what's been knocking me out, bro? Because you said you were taking like CBD to sleep.
Yeah, it's helped me a little bit.
It's helping, right? Are you having problems sleeping?
No.
But why are you taking it for?
Oh, usually, honestly, man, I need some kind of aid to sleep. I can't just sleep on my own. Maybe melatonin. I switch it around.
Yeah. Ever since I had this neck issue, I had to start doing that. But I had to start like knocking my brain out to sleep through the fucking numbness that wakes me up. Ugh. So that I could actually get some fucking sleep. You know what I mean?
You get that every single night?
So lately I've been doing like my own like neck exercises to strengthen my neck. I saw another doctor, bro. So the doctor that they sent me to, the HMO doctor, was a piece of shit doctor, bro. He did the MRI and then he just went through the MRI and was like, basically was just like, well, this is compressed, that is compressed, physical therapy. That was it.
That's it.
No in-depth information, no other fucking whatever. And then this is why healthcare in this country can fucking suck sometimes. And then what I did was I was like, you know what? Fuck this shit. I researched this other thing called PRP. Do you know what that is?
Yes.
Platelet-rich plasma injections. And you can get the doctor to inject platelet-rich plasma into wherever there's problem, and then it would heal better. It's less effective and less expensive than stem cells, right?
It sounds like it's just like stem cell in a way.
Yeah, but it's not. So I went and talked to him. I got a consultation. The consultation cost me $300, okay? This was the best $300 I spent in terms of like, this guy spent an hour and a half, Tarek, going through everything. He brought out a model of my neck. He showed me exactly where it was happening. He started telling me like why it's doing what it's doing, really educating me, telling me the type of neck exercises I needed to do to maybe probably help it, right? So even before he tried to sell me on the PRP treatment, he educated me first and told me, go home, think about it, because you might be able to alleviate it yourself. What a good doctor, you know what I mean? Right. Instead of trying to sell me on a $5,000 procedure. And then what does he do is he taught me something, man. He realized I was double jointed. Look at my fingers.
Because he did a test on me.
Oof.
So I can turn to the camera so they can see. Look at that, guys. I can bend my finger all the way back.
And when he found that out, this is why you got to find the right doctor. As soon as he found that out, he goes, oh. He goes, now I think I know why you're having compressed disc issues. He goes, you're pretty flexible, aren't you? And I was like, yeah. He goes, for like a pretty big guy, he goes, are you pretty flexible? Do you stretch a lot? I go, I don't stretch a lot, but I try. But I'm so limber. My whole life, I could touch my toes standing up. You know what I mean? I've always been like flexible. So he told me, hey, you know what it is? Your neck is so flexible and so limber that while you're sleeping, it's bending more than usual. And it's causing it to hit that nerve. He goes, what you need to do is focus less on stretching your neck and instead strengthening it. Very fucking smart shit, bro. I learned a lot from that. But then he told me if I did the PRP, I would have to come back every year for a little bit, whatever. And I'm like, you know what? Let me search something else. So I got what I got from him. And ever since I talked to him, I've been strengthening my shit. It's getting better.
They're doing that stem cell on the brain.
They're doing it everywhere, bro.
They're rejuvenating
the brain. You go put stem cells in your dick, bro. In your fucking dick. Listen,
they're rejuvenating.
In your dick. What you know about putting stem cells in your dick, biatch?
He's silly.
What were you saying about the brain?
It rejuvenates the brain.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mel Gibson's father, I think, had that done.
Mike Tyson did it.
I heard it first with Mel Gibson on Joe Rogan. He brought this doctor from Panama because the type of stem cell treatment that they did in Panama is outlawed here in America. So you have to go travel to somewhere else to do it. And hold on. So his father, I guess, I forgot what his father was suffering from.
It's a Medea over there.
Mel Gibson sent his father there, right?
It's a Medea.
And got him this stem cell treatment. And now his father is like 90 years old, but he's acting like he's 50. He's out getting laid. You know what I'm saying? He got a sex drive back, bro. I'm like, cuz, I'm going to Panama. You know?
From the stem cell.
The stem cells on the dick, bro. That really, that's something I definitely want to like think about. But I heard that procedure is like $30,000.
You got a problem?
You're gonna pull out a mortgage on
that. You got a problem?
You're gonna go pull out a mortgage.
You want to do it? You got a problem?
You're gonna refinance your home and then put stem cells in your dick, Tarek, and then put Invisalign in your teeth and.
Why not?
Be the fucking most perfect human. You know what I mean? Like the fucking Adonis that you are.
Thank you. I'll take that as a compliment.
It is a compliment, bro.
I'll take it. Even though you're being sarcastic, I'll take it as a compliment.
I'm delivering it in a sarcastic tone, but I believe in it. You know what I mean?
God bless you, Ishak.
Yeah, now? Hey, the one thing I love about you, Tarek, bro, is that you're so, well, you have so much charisma. You're like a really good person, right?
Thank you.
You're still a brute.
A brute.
Yeah, you're still
never
a brute.
I haven't heard that one in a while.
Yeah, you're a brute, bro. You're a fucking savage. You know what I mean? Like, you're like a charismatic savage.
You gotta keep a balance, man. You can't be too much of one. You
know? Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
But it's me, bro. That's where I was raised.
It's the way we were Dearborn. Yeah. You know, it is what it is, right? But you do it in a specific way, man. You do it in a way that's very, very likable, you know? It doesn't surprise me that you can, like, walk up to 3-6 Mafia and, I'm rolling with you guys. And now you're part of their crew. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, man. One thing that I do, I told you, oh, that's what we were talking about before the thing. I talked about how you're a socialite. And you were like, I'm not a socialite.
I'm not. I go out of town. I'm at the hotel. I don't do nothing.
Yeah, you do.
I stay at the hotel. When I go out of town, people, I go to a nice
place. Tarek's out of his mind. You know what I'm saying?
A nice place. I make sure there's a nice restaurant, a nice pool, nice area to lay out. Boom. I lay out all day. Relax, get some dinner there, get some lunch, get some dinner, get some drinks, and just chill. I don't want to go to this restaurant, go here, go there. I have no itinerary, bro. I don't ever believe in itinerary. It's the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, but I mean,
I just go there and just do what I want.
Yeah, I do what I want too, but I go on an adventure. Like, you go
hiking?
You go to L.A., okay, to look at a fucking pool. The fuck is that shit?
I'm laying at the pool, bro.
You can build a pool right here. Build one.
Actually, they won't let me. Association can't. We're not allowed to.
Oh, there's like a condo area?
No, but they don't have the association.
There's an association here?
There's no fences up here.
Okay, wait. Why does this neighborhood have an association? Now you're pissing me the fuck off. I hate associations.
It's not one of those kinds. It's not the monthly one. This is a national. My neighborhood is a national historic. It's on a national historic registry, which is, it's considered a historic neighborhood. So only certain things can be done to it. Like our windows had to have certain lines on them, our windows.
Is that why the door has those lines?
Yeah, all the ones.
Those windows that are on the door?
I don't know about those, but I know on windows on the house, most, if you go through a neighborhood, they're all like that.
Hmm.
And you can't put a pool because there's no fences.
It's time to move, bro.
Nah, bro.
It's time to fucking find and just rent this place out and find another spot.
Let's see. I like this house. I like this neighborhood.
Yeah. To me, I'm just like, why don't you just like post, like just put up a pool, bro? To me, I don't understand the idea of like traveling to hang out at a pool. That really, like
you know, it's called relaxing.
Yeah, but you go to LA to do that?
What else you want me to do? Go to a restaurant? I go to restaurants here and there, but no matter what you do in LA, you can do it here. You go to a restaurant, go to a restaurant here. What else you want to do in LA? What are you going to do in LA? You want to go to a bar? You go to a bar here.
There's a lot to do in LA. There's the beautiful beaches, bro.
I've been.
You can like take one of my favorite things to do when people come visit, they like show me, and I'm gonna show them around. You know, I'll take them to a few different like ethnic restaurants, like take some good Cuban food, you know what I mean? Go to a nice Italian restaurant, one of my favorite spots or whatever. Korean barbecue because I'm like close to K-Town. And like it's like a city where you can almost experience like different countries is what it feels like.
Here we go to Bahamas.
It's not the fuck Bahamas. We grew up with that shit, bro.
Down the street to Cedarland.
So you're going to get shawarma and then you're going to get shawarma. Yeah. What the fuck is wrong with
you, bro? Alamir for some chicken.
Hamido's, bro. Hamido's got the best chicken. I don't know. To me, it's just like, yeah. And then another good thing is like, you know, you go to like Venice Beach, right? Right now, man, it's like a lot of homeless people there. But what I used to do is I would take people to Venice Beach. I'd rent bikes on the Venice Beach side. And then we can ride our bikes along that bike path next to the ocean all the way to Santa Monica. It's about a 15-minute, nice, beautiful ride. And then you go under there where the Ferris wheel is. You know, you can like take a ride on the Ferris wheel if you want or whatever ride you want to do. And then like right below there, there's like a dive bar, but they serve the best fish tacos, man. And you're right next to the ocean, so the fish is like fresh as fuck. Why are you laughing?
Do you think they got the fish right there on the spot because they're in the ocean?
What do you think? They harpoon them from a helicopter. yeah, bro. No, but it's good though. It's like one of those things when you eat the fish, you can tell. Listen, if you're gonna be on any of the coasts, your fish is gonna be far more fresh than it would be in the middle of America, right? Because you're already from the water. Wherever they're getting that fish from, they're already closer to the water to begin with.
True.
Well, you think they go to Indonesia to get fucking tuna, bro?
I mean,
they probably with tuna, yeah, maybe. But like, but salmon, like salmon. Salmon, like we have salmon here in America. Are you mad at me right now?
No, I'm glad to finish. We got salmon in America.
I have nothing else to
we
say.
We got salmon in America and?
Yeah.
Cheers to that.
Cheers, bro. Hold on. I got to do this drink. Cheerio, bro.
Yes, yes, yes.
So tell me about your, like what got you into boxing, bro?
The south end of Dearborn. Dix Avenue, the south end.
Was there a lot of Yemenis there back then?
Oh, yeah.
So you grew up around a lot of Yemenis?
Yahi.
Yahi.
Yeah, bro, of course.
A lot of Yemenis, huh?
Let me tell you, man, the Yemenis, overall, great people, great culture, and very, I can't speak for everyone, but the majority, very loyal people.
Loyal. Nice.
Yeah.
Humble. You know?
They supported me throughout my career.
They support each other. They really care about community.
Yeah, they do.
But Lebanese people, I feel, are the same way. They care a lot about community, but there's a lack of humbleness with Lebanese people as a whole.
It becomes a competition, I guess.
Everything becomes a competition with Lebanese people, which is I also admire, though, you know?
Yeah, they strive for the best.
Yeah. So you started in the South End.
Well, the Joe Hamoud Center was a recreation.
If anybody doesn't know, the Dearborn is split up into different, like, you know, areas, and the south end of Dearborn has been notoriously majority Yemeni American, and then the east side of Dearborn has majority Lebanese American.
But it started off with the south end being Arab and Yemeni.
Well,
and then the Arabs moved to East Dearborn.
Exactly. But because the first, you know, Yemenis have been here before Lebanese people as a whole. The Yemenis came here in the early 1900s to work on the docks in Detroit. And the reason why they were able to come here is because they already have dock experience working in Yemen. Because Yemen is right there on the water, you know? So a lot of these Yemenis already had the skills of being able to work on a dock. That's what allowed them to come in America, get citizenship. And a lot of them lived here in Detroit. And then when Henry Ford opened up, you know, the factories, it was the first time ever that you could get a job that paid that well, but you didn't have to have a skill. Because before, in order to come into America, you had to have some type of skill to come into this bitch. Mm-hmm. But yeah, once the assembly lines picked up, that's when the Yemenis here that were working on the docks picked up their phones, started calling their cousins in Yemen, Yahi, it's time to come to Dearborn because you can get a job without having to have a degree or anything like that. So Yemenis have been here for a long time. But anyway, so you started over there, south end of Dearborn.
It was me. We used to go to the Joe Hamoud Center. It was a recreation center that was funded by the city. To stay off the streets, me and about 40, 50 kids. One day they said, hey, we're going to start boxing as an activity here.
Yeah.
Who wants to do it? Everyone's like, yeah, I want to fight. I want to box. I want to box. So every day after school, we come. We wouldn't change our school. We stay in our school clothes. We get in the bleachers, and the coach would look at us and be like, okay, you and you, come on down. You fight each other. Get in the ring. Throw on some big gloves and go at it right there with our school clothes on. So we all like daily.
Would
daily.
What, box?
Boxing, sparring each other. But then it's...
Why do they do that at the Joe Hamoud Center? Was the Joe Hamoud Center a boxing center?
It's a recreation center.
But did you...
They started boxing as an activity.
So they started boxing activity and they asked who wanted to do it.
Yeah, I mean about 50 kids jumped in.
Right.
To do it. We all would come every day after school and get in the ring and fight each other. And we go to tournaments. And little by little, people started quitting one by one, either football or other sports or the streets. As we got older for a couple of years later, I was winning. But I knew from the moment I put the gloves on, I go, this is my life. This will be my career. I knew right then. So I ended up being like the last one left out of all the guys. They quit.
Oh.
And I was the last one left, and I was a U.S. champ. I was 13 years old. I was, you know, I was U.S. champion at 13, and I ended up going to Herman Gardens, which was the projects over on Joy Road and Southfield.
Okay.
They knocked them down. They built new.
Yeah. Herman Gardens, huh?
That was one of the most notorious projects in the city of Detroit.
No shit.
Hell yeah, man. And they had a little school in there. They put a boxing gym in the school, and I would go there and train with these guys over there. With a guy named Oba Carr, his dad Eddie Carr, who Oba ended up becoming like a really good boxer. But we trained there. We were winning national championships, me and Oba. About a year later, Emmanuel Stewart, who was the head of the Kronk Gym in Detroit, seeing us winning these titles, he's like, hey, I want you guys to come to Kronk. About 13, 14 years old, we went to Kronk.
How did that feel?
It was good, man. Oh, unbelievable.
I bet you felt like you were on the right path.
Yeah, Emmanuel, for those of you who don't know Emmanuel, the greatest trainer in the history of boxing.
Emmanuel serves as a legend.
And this guy really gave, as kids, he gave me attention and really like motivated me. He was good people, man. And the, you know, the Kronk Gym itself, from there I went to the Kronk Gym, and that was a once in a lifetime experience at that gym. It was set, the Kronk Gym is probably the most famous boxing gym in the world.
Underground type gym, right?
The original one,
even the name Kronk, like it sounds like a sound effect of what would it sound like if you got knocked up, Kronk, Kronk. Where, do you know where the term Kronk came from?
John Kronk is the name of the guy, but it's actually the Kronk Recreation Center. It's a city of Detroit rec center that, if you go to the top level, there's a gymnasium. You know, people who play basketball in the basement of this gym. Of this building in the basement, they put the gym in there, the boxing gym, which is small. Imagine how big a basement is. Low ceiling. The ring was ground
basically level. Backyard productions.
Yeah, but this is where the gym that produced world champions, Thomas Hearns.
I mean, isn't that usually where the world champions come from? Yeah. I don't think the world champions come from rich areas.
Now, I'm telling you.
Don't they? Wouldn't you say that's like a trend? Like a lot of the best fighters come from.
Yeah, because a lot of the low
areas people, where they have to fucking like
yeah,
literally
but people always they take it where you got to be poor to become a real champion. You have a better chance because you had nothing. The rich don't want it as much. That's I don't believe in any of that stuff. It's more about passion, you know what I mean? I don't care if rich or it happens to be that way because the more higher income families don't allow their kids to box. So there's a lot more lower income kids boxing, which results in more lower income world champions that come from lower income.
Do you think it's because that there's more opportunities to do boxing in lower income areas, or
yeah, you don't have to. Have
or do you think it's just that with lower income areas breed tougher people?
Well,
because like if you're a cake eater, you know what I mean. If you're like born rich and stuff. We've all seen that. That's not to say that there aren't like kids that are born to rich parents that don't have drive, but sometimes, usually the majority of the time, you see somebody who like grew up rich and had everything handed to them. They don't have the drive or the anger or the angst to want to like box their way out of their life.
It depends. Some people have. I mean,
Pacquiao. You know what I mean?
How about these guys that are making $100 million today and they're still hungry? They still have that passion.
Yeah,
that passion.
But that passion comes from them growing up without that. So
not
in
really.
A very, very young
not
age.
Really, not really. Not growing up poor doesn't give them passion. What gives them passion is they love the sport. It's like when you're younger, you might have liked Nintendo and you were on it like crazy as your passion or whatever it is that you love to do. It doesn't have to be from your background or your income.
It
caused you to do that. You love it. I mean, have to box.
I'm pretty sure you would have to like, you know, cite some references, like what type of famous world champion boxers do we know grew up rich?
And today, in the last 20, 30 years, as I told you, a lot of the boxers are coming from lower income areas because the high income, they're not allowing their kids to box. The lower income, they allow their kids to box more. Why? I don't know, but they do. Maybe they feel it's a way out or way to a better life that they allow their kids to do it. But more in high, back in the old days, you see a lot more white champions back in the old days and Jewish champions back in the old days. because they were the higher income. Everyone was sending their kids to the gym. Everyone was. And who succeeds is the one that was passionate and loved it, not the one who was more poor. And poor doesn't make you hungry.
Yeah, but can you cite a famous boxer? I don't know boxing that well. That we know is someone who like came up with money.
Well, if you got to go back to the old days for that.
Really? Hold on a second. Let me see. Boxers who grown up rich. Let's see. 20 richest boxers in history. That's not what I'm looking for. The top 20 richest boxers. Fuck you. That's not what I'm looking for. See? Even the search engines have no idea how to like take that question. I'm like trying to put it in there and it's just like, oh, you want to talk about the ones that made it rich. I'm like, no, man, I want to know the ones that grew up with a silver spoon in their mouth and still had the fucking gusto, anger, drive, and need to make it to the top. Fucking Floyd Mayweather. Holy shit.
I don't think those people that had that kind of money allow their kids to box, so it's going to be hard to find someone like that.
That's exactly my point.
My whole point is...
That's my point, bro.
Succeeding in boxing doesn't come from your background.
When of course it does.
No, it does not. It comes from you wanting your will to want it.
Listen, I know that.
I know a lot of guys from the hood who were dying to get out and couldn't from boxing.
You're right. That is on a personal level. Not every person who grows up poor has drive, but those who do have drive have so much drive and I think a lot of angst that they have to put their anger somewhere. Look at Mike Tyson, man. Mike Tyson was a like terrorizing yet gentle soul. He was this kid who was pent up with anger. His life fucking sucked. He loved birds. You know what I'm saying? He would like raise birds, pigeons, right? He would raise pigeons. And then I read this one story where he got his one of the kids like killed one of his pigeons and he fucking lost his shit.
Yeah.
And fucking destroyed this kid. And then the word got around the neighborhood. And if you look at Mike Tyson, let's face it. That guy grew up poor. Fucking he really grew up in a harsh climate. You can't tell me that didn't contribute to his angst and his drive to be the best fighter in the world.
You know, he was adopted by Cus D'Amato, his trainer, who adopted him at 15 years old, 14 years old, I should say.
That's who it is, right?
13 or 14 years old.
But if I'm not mistaken, Cus D'Amato heard of him through the neighborhood.
No, he started training there, and Cus D'Amato ended up adopting him at 13 or 14. So reality... Tyson was only in the hood for the first 13 years of his life, but he got in a lot of trouble in those 13 years.
Okay, but my point is, I think the disconnect that we're having is this here. Your formidable years, your most youngest years, is the time where you are growing and your body starts to really program who you are going to be for the world that you're going to be coming out of or dealing with when you become an adult. So I believe those that are the youngest and they've grown up in harsher climates, harsher environments or whatever, they're hardwired at a young age to have a specific type of drive that sometimes a lot of people don't have.
I used to think the same way. I don't think so.
You don't think so, huh?
I think that...
That's interesting. Okay.
I don't at all. I think that...
I still can't find a boxer that was growing up rich. I'm having a hard time. I tried Google. I tried DuckDuckGo. And here we go. There's a fucking question that happened on Reddit. Question was, just curious if there was any great boxers or champs that grew up with a silver spoon. Perfect.
Probably none.
Let me see if I can share the screen here so everyone can see.
Probably none, and if they were, they probably were not introduced.
Someone says Chris Eubank Jr. was one name that got voted to the top.
Oh yeah,
do you know who that is?
Yeah, he's a good fighter. His father was a world champion.
So he grew up rich from a boxer.
Yeah, and
that's interesting.
He's fighting today, so he's still fighting. Chris Eubank Jr.
He's still fighting, huh?
He's a young, up-and-coming guy. He's good.
Well, here's the thing, though. He is a product of a man that probably didn't grow up rich. So, if anything, if he wanted to become a boxer, imagine the type of discipline his father had to give him from the get-go. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, but...
Right?
I think it's about doing what you love.
How good is he, though? Is he good?
He's pretty good.
Did he win anything?
Yeah.
He says he also held the IBO super middleweight title twice between 2017 and 2019, and at regional level, the British middleweight title in 2016. All right. Okay. There's one.
Not that many are introduced to the sport. I'm telling you right now.
Somebody else said Billy Joe Saunders and Tyson Fury. Just not rich as far as the bank or tax man were concerned. I knew about Tyson Fury, but I ain't know. Oh, okay. So Tyson Fury a boxer?
Oh, yeah. Tyson's good.
He's good. He's a heavyweight champion. You ever see the Gypsy King? You don't know him?
I don't really watch boxing that much. If there's any fighting that I really pay attention to, I never pay attention to any sport, meaning like I follow who's fighting, or I'm not like that. I've never been like that. But if there's any type of sport that I actually can sit down and watch, it's MMA. MMA is the one that really fucking gets me focused into watching it. Boxing, I lose focus.
MMA, I can't do that, bro.
Any other sports, you know, like baseball, go fuck yourself. Football, I like watching football, but even then I can't like lock in like that. You know what I'm saying? But when I watch a fight, bro, especially like an MMA fight where you don't know what the fuck is about to happen, that there's no rules in terms of how you can like maneuver yourself. You know, that's one thing I respect about boxing is that it's a limited, like, I don't know too much about boxing. Would you say that boxing is
it's more of a science.
It's like a chess game, right? It's like chess, right? It's like chess, right?
Yes.
So you're kind of limited. You can't kick. No. You can't grab, right? What else can't you do?
You can't do what you want to do. You got to do what the rules go tell you to do. So it's one of those things.
So it's like a chess game, kind of like how this chess piece can only move in an L and this chess piece can only whatever.
Yeah.
I think that's what intrigues people who understand boxing. They understand boxing so much that then when they watch it, they're watching it like they're watching a chess match. It's like, how can these people use these specific set of rules that confine them to their best ability, right?
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
To me, I like MMA because it's like so. You said you don't like watching MMA. To me, I like it because it's so random. You don't know what the fuck's going to happen.
I don't like that. You make one bad move, you slip, and you get tapped out. I don't like that. It ends too early. I think there should be a 3-tap-out rule.
A 3-tap-out rule.
You know what I mean? Because a guy slips, it's a big, big fight, and the guy slips.
I don't know about a 3-tap-out rule. Hold on a second.
You knock the guy out.
But have you seen those moments where like they have to stop it because like the other person's like now bashing this guy's face in? Okay, what do you do then? Be like, all right, stop. Guys, cut the commercial. We'll be right back and see if Conor McGregor wants to go another round.
No, that's different. If you make a guy quit or whatever the case is and you're pounding him like that, that's a knockout. Talking when a guy slips and they tap him out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they put him in a submission.
Yeah.
But that's the same thing.
It happens too quick.
I think that's why in MMA they have like evolved where the best fighters also had to learn good ground game because a lot of the times the game is won on the ground, you know? Yeah,
that grappling.
It would be interesting if they did MMA where they got rid of grappling. Oof, that would change everything.
What are they going to do if they're not grappling?
Kicking, punching.
No wrestling?
Have you seen that one? I'm going to pull this up and show everyone. There's this amazing, I forgot who did it. Hold on a second. Hey. Fighter. There's this one MMA fighter that does a kick off the stage, off the cage. I wish I had like a way to show it to you. Hold on, where is it? Fuck. I hate how Google is, man. Like back in the day, MMA fighter. jump kick off cage. Maybe somebody who's watching can tell me what his name is. But what I'm saying is like, you know, if you got rid of the grappling, you would get to a point where it would now have to be power moves. Like you'd have to get him with a punch or you'd have to get him with a flying kick or something like that. It would make the game more exciting because I agree. Like sometimes when they get to the ground, you're like, oh, fuck. Oh, fucking, I waited for this entire fight. It's going to end in 45 seconds, bro. Fuck out of here, man. Imagine if they did that. Do you think that that would be something where you would actually enjoy watching more?
I'm not an MMA fan.
At all, huh? What is it about watching MMA that you don't like as compared to boxing? Are you just partial to the?
No, it's not that at all. Actually, I think MMA is very good for boxing. It's a contact sport. It brings attention to contact sports. Whatever helps MMA helps all boxing and vice versa.
You think so?
It's contact sport. It's all the same. They're totally different sports, but contact, which kind of blends them in the same category.
Anthony Pettis. Bro, have you seen this?
No.
Fuck, I wish I could turn this thing around. I'm afraid if I turn it around, I'm going to fuck it all up, huh?
Anthony Pettis?
Yeah, come around. I want to show you this. Just come around real quick. I want to show you this. I'm going to. To me, this is the fucking, like. Oh, man, I don't know. Here we go. Oh, my God. You ready? Watch this, bro. No, bro. This is like straight up from a movie. Watch this. Watch this. Watch this.
His nickname Showtime.
Bro, he jumped off the cage.
That's it.
Look at that. That's it. You're a piece of shit, bro. That's it.
You're getting pressed easily, Mike.
Wow, you're a fucking turd, bro. You really are a turd. You just fucked up my camera, didn't you?
Oh, you're on.
Damn, you fucking, hey, you're on there. Turn it, bro.
You're on there, I see it.
No, put me in the center of the thing. No, in the center.
Right there, you're center, right there.
Man. Right there. Perfect.
Right there.
That'll center. Work. All right. Thank you, buddy. to me, it's hilarious. I showed you something that is so fucking amazing. Some guy kicks a guy in the face, knocks him out by jumping off the cage. He runs, jumps in the air, puts one foot on the cage, bounces off the cage midair, and then uses that foot and momentum to kick the guy in the face and knock him out. And you're saying, that's it?
It was nice. Not thrilling, but nice.
That was thrilling.
But nice.
What the fuck? How is that not thrilling, hey, bro? Hey, somebody asked a question. A buddy from the Marines asked me a question. He wants to know, what was Tariq's most memorable boxing match?
Ooh. Probably when I fought for the North American Boxing Organization for North America, the middleweight championship. I was actually in Arizona. I fought a guy named Jerry Cheatham. It was his hometown. He had the whole place filled.
This was where?
In Arizona, Phoenix.
Arizona, okay.
And we only had like maybe a few Arabs from Dearborn were out there, living out there. They came to visit.
Oh, nice.
And then
if anybody doesn't know, Tariq Al-Amassi used to box under the name the Arabian Prince.
Yeah, that's right.
The Arabian Prince. Like back in the day, all of us Arabs from Dearborn, man, me and especially my boy Abbas Ajroush, we would drive in the middle of a fucking blizzard, 40 minutes to Auburn Hills.
You know, it was that one night. It was one night that was like that.
There was a couple of nights. It was a couple of nights where it snowed that we went to go see you. That one night was like, we should turn around, bro.
I remember that night.
But then we're like, no, we got to see Tariq fly, bro. Every time we saw you, you won. It's like you were undefeated, man. It's like every time we saw you, you won. But anyways, the Arabian Prince is in Arizona, and this is your most memorable fight. Okay, he packs out the house.
Well, my opponent had all his people there. And then it was an important fight. It got me rated in the top 10. But actually, and this guy kept talking shit, fighting dirty, this and that. He ended up getting real frustrated in the 10th round. He wanted to quit. But he grabbed my leg and lifted my leg up and tried like to, he grabbed my leg and started running with my leg. I was hopping on one foot. Like, what's this guy doing? So the referee.
In what round?
The 10th round.
Oh, wow. You guys went 10 rounds.
It was about 12. It was a 12 round fight.
No. Okay. So you guys went 10 rounds. How many minutes per round?
Three.
3 minutes. Yeah. And then, wow. And then How were the other rounds?
I was beating the shit out of the guy the whole fight. I was wearing him down. It's kind of one of those things where he's looking to quit. Instead of getting knocked out, he wanted to quit. So he grabbed my leg and said, like, he wanted to get disqualified.
He was exhausted.
He wanted to get disqualified. And yeah. The referee ended up disqualifying him. Fight's over. And I'm walking away with my hands up in the air. And he's coming at me. I see him behind me. He's coming at me to hit me.
This is after?
Yeah, after the fight. I waited to stop that. I put my hands up. I walked away. I look behind me. Here he comes. He's coming to get me. I turn around and sucker punched him, bro. Boom.
Mitts on?
Yeah, this is right after they stopped the fight.
How awesome is that?
Then the crowd is his hometown. They started going nuts. They're throwing stuff at me in the ring.
Yeah, that must have been fucking scary.
And then guess who got in a fight with him? The Arabs from Dearborn.
No. The three Arabs from Dearborn fought the whole fucking Coliseum.
That's hilarious.
We're not scared of you, bro. We see what Israel can do to our homes, bro. What are you white guys gonna do? Did they get their asses kicked? They must have got their asses kicked.
I don't know what happened, but it was crazy. It was funny.
That is fucking funny, bro. Wow. How nervous were you there after the fucking, you had to do the sucker punch? That was not a sucker punch, though. That's not a sucker. A sucker punch is when you hit someone and they don't know the fight's coming. That's a sucker punch.
Well, he didn't know this was coming. He was coming at me.
Well, of course he didn't know that was coming. But my point is that that's not a sucker punch. You're defending yourself.
Yeah, it was fair.
You knocked him out.
Fair game.
Did you knock him out?
No, I just clocked him. I didn't knock him out. I just turned around real quick. So I wasn't able to really place my punch. Because it was kind of like real quick in the spot.
Yeah, yeah.
Turn on his head.
How soon after they called the fight that he got up and tried to go after you? Like how many, I'm like, what? So like when you win the fight, you typically your whole team runs on the thing, right?
When they stopped the fight.
Yeah.
Over. And I went to my corner like that, but my hands up in my corner. And I seen him coming at me.
That quick?
Yeah, right in the spot.
Do you think he grabbed you because he wanted to get disqualified? Or do you think he grabbed you because he was so exhausted?
I think he was looking to get disqualified. I think so. I don't know. Who knows? It's done, cuz. But yeah, that was probably that memorable in that sense. But I had a lot of memorable fights. ESPN fight, my first time on ESPN, getting knocked down. And I remember being on the floor. I was like 21 years old. First time ever I was knocked down. It was national TV, ESPN. And I knew all my friends. This is what motivated me. I knew all my friends were on spring break in Florida watching me. And I go, no way am I losing. Well, my friends are spring break. I'll never hear the end of it. You know what I mean? Hilarious.
Your fucking first idea is like, my friends are on spring break, bro.
No, when I got knocked down.
Bro, they're going to be trying to pick up these girls, and they're going to be telling the girls, hey, that's my boy right there.
Yeah, they're at the club. They're watching me fight right now. So
and then you get knocked out, and then the girls don't want to fuck them anymore.
So when I was... So listen.
So you were thinking about your boys
when I was on the floor,
and getting
listen,
laid and
when
shit.
I was on the floor, I got hit hard too. When I was on the floor, I was only knocked down once in my life. I knocked down on the floor. I was like, I popped in my head. I go, man, no, this is what motivated me. I was sitting there, laying there. I go, there's no way I'm gonna lose right now and knock out. My friends are in Florida, spring break, watching me right now. There's no way. I'm going to get up. They get up.
That's hilarious.
Got up.
And you got up?
The next round, boom, knocked him down.
Shut the fuck up. Out?
Well, down.
Down.
Almost out.
Okay, and then?
I ended up winning the fight.
You win the fight by decision. That's great. Wow. That must have been an exciting fight that you both knocked each other down.
You didn't see that? You never seen it, did you?
No, I never saw it, ever.
Oh, I was 21 years old with a fresh haircut.
Yeah, remember we used to slick our hair?
Donnie Brasco style.
Did you ever have to relax your hair?
Of course. Why do you think I'm bald? Why do you think I'm bald? You know, I'm going to tell you who started that thing, bro.
Listen, our hair... Hold on a second. Hold on a second. You mean to tell me that you know the origins of why we started relaxing our hair?
1,000%.
In Dearborn.
Yeah, look at
it. You don't give the credit to the black people because they've been doing it forever,
bro. Arabs never did that.
We never did it until the fucking 80s, right?
No, it was probably 1992.
Yeah, about 92. You might be right, 92. Bro. About right 92, I think you might be 92. Right.
There's a guy. You know who it was? Listen, it's Haas Abdullah.
Hold on a second. If anybody doesn't know, like white people or whatever, if you guys don't know, Arabs in the mid 90s kind of went through like a cultural, we started having like an identity crisis. As a whole, you know, that's when we started going, hey man, we want to assimilate with America, so we want to look more less Arab. So we started like, you know, tending to our unibrows, you know what I mean? We started like, another thing that started happening, like he said in 1992, is that some of us with hair that wasn't that straight, we wanted to slick our hair back because that was like the thing back then, right? Especially guys that were like ethnic, you would slick your hair back, yeah, like an Italian. Did, like
you put a bunch of gel in and it wouldn't slick back.
It wouldn't. Boom. It would just turn into a fucking crinkly, crusty thing. You know what I mean? It wouldn't be like straight. So, you know, as every minority does in America, we try to conform to the standards of white beauty. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, we just started relaxing our hair in Dearborn, and if white people who don't know, like black people do this too, you can go buy this stuff called relaxer.
It's called Dark and Lovely.
Dark and Lovely.
Don't forget, that's what it's called. Dark and Lovely.
It's called Dark and Lovely, and then it's got a picture of a black person on it, and you're buying this like, that's not for me, but whatever. So you take Dark and Lovely home, and then...
But look, here's the thing.
Hold on, shut up.
The professional way to do it. They're supposed to go to the salon and have a salon guy do it for you, whatever.
Yeah. No. We didn't do that. We did it in the basement because, hold on, here's the thing.
Garage.
So you put it in your hair, right? And this stuff is nuclear. It is. It's really nuclear. If you ever put the stuff on your scalp, it tells you that you can only leave it on with a specific amount of time. Because if you leave
it's
on...
It's supposed to be on a scalp. It's not supposed to be on a scalp at all.
Because if you leave it on for too long, and this happened to me before... Hold on. I left it for too long, and it fucking ate through my skin. It ate through my skin. So anyways.
Well, look, a relaxer is not supposed to touch your scalp at all. That's the problem right there.
I know. The problem is we're doing it in the basement.
We're doing it in the basement.
So now my hair is nice and straight and gelled back, but I'm bleeding. My head's fucking got scabs and shit. In the worst case scenario. I mean, we ended up figuring it out.
One of our friends started doing
that. But you said it's in 1992 is when it started.
Yeah.
This is hilarious. He's tracing down when we got our...
Haas Abdullah.
Hassan Abdullah.
God rest his soul.
Is he dead?
Haas Abdullah.
You know, I didn't know that.
You probably think of a different one. Are you thinking of someone I'm thinking of?
Oh, I'm thinking Hassan Daklallah.
No.
Just one letter changes everything. No, Hassan Daklallah
He was dying. He would do it for everyone. You go to his house, there's a line of guys at his house. He goes, hey, sit down, I'll do it for you. And he'll do it, he'll put it on you, he'll slap it on your head and touching your scalp. He's massaging your head with it. It's not supposed to touch your scalp.
He's not supposed to touch your scalp.
Massaging your head with it. You done? You hear all of a sudden, now you hear, instead of being like really hard and slick right back.
But it didn't last that long. 2 weeks later, you had to
I'll tell you what. We do it and we, like I said, it touched our scalp. So it didn't affect us the first time or the second time. It looked good, but it caught up to us because we burnt our follicles.
That's not why you're bald, bro.
We burnt the follicles.
And that's not why you're bald.
Dark and lovely, Khaya.
Khaya. That's not why you're bald, though. You're bald because that's just genetics, bro. It's called DHT.
It is. But
typically, men with a lot of testosterone produce a byproduct of testosterone called DHT, which DHT is a very good anabolic form of testosterone, which actually helps create muscle, increases sexual libido. But then the byproduct is you go bald. So, you know, typically DHT is the reason why you lost your hair. It's not the fucking shit, bro. You didn't burn it like that. Because listen, if you did, then your bald spot wouldn't be as uniform as it is. You know what I mean? Like my bald spot, if I grow my hair out, it looks the way it naturally would have lost itself. You know, like it's got the crown and the whatever. You know what I mean? Like... The patches that it's lost in are the typical areas that people would have male pattern baldness. So that's an old wives' tale, you know?
No, I'm telling you. It was never the same right after the first treatment.
Hassan Abdullah, huh?
The first treatment, it was never the same after that.
The thing is, my mom was a beautician. So my mom would do it for me. So she knew exactly how to do it. But she told me not to do it. And then after a while, you know, I would ask her, Mom, I need my hair. And she's like, too busy. So I started doing it myself in the bathroom. Then I burned my fucking scalp. And I saw, like,
there you go, bro.
That's not why I lost my hair, bro. There you go. My dad is bald. We're Arabs, bro. Arabs typically have high testosterone, high DHT. That's why you see a lot of Arabs that are bald. As a matter of fact, back in the early 2000s, there was a study that came out where they thought that they were going to be able to cure baldness by tapping into the genes of Arab men, because because the majority of people that, like, the most bald men per capita are in the Middle East.
Really?
Yeah, it's a prevalent trait in the Middle East. Male pattern baldness. It's everywhere, but, like, especially in the Middle East. It's crazy. So, like, for a while there, they were thinking that that might have been the key, that they were going to be able to find some type of gene in Middle Eastern men that would be able to reverse the thing. And then later on, what they find out is we all have the same genetics. Like, everything. Like, out of the gazillion amount of genes in us, they are all identically the same except for one gene, which separates how we look, our facial features, you know? But that's before, that's what they thought. They were like, well, the majority of people who are bald per capita are Arabs. But it wasn't Dark and Lovely that made you lose your hair, bro.
I told you the very first time I used it, it was never the same. It wasn't a gradual process. It was the very first time.
What do you mean it was never the same? What was never the same?
The first treatment, yeah. I had a receding, after I finished, I had a receding hairline.
How old were you?
About 21.
That's right around the time a guy who's gonna about to go bald is going to lose his hair. What?
I'm glad I went bald. How about that?
Oh, you fucking still, you mad about you getting bald?
No.
Yeah, you are.
I swear I'm not.
This is turning into a psychology podcast, guys. We're going to break down Tariq Salamasi, why he doesn't like being bald, and two, why he doesn't like putting the microphone close to his face.
I love being bald. I can care less.
Shut up. If you could take right now a procedure and your hair would grow right back.
I would not do it.
You're a liar.
I would not do it.
Wallah, you're a liar.
No. Would you do it?
Fuck yeah.
No, I wouldn't.
Why?
I don't know. For what?
Explain yourself. You have to explain yourself. Otherwise, I'm not going to let it go.
It's easy. You know already. It's easier to do. You're not doing nothing. You got to comb it. You're good.
Coming from the guy who just had Invisalign in his mouth during the beginning of the podcast, I don't believe you.
Why?
I don't believe you.
What don't you believe?
Listen, bro. How many times have you said to me things like, okay, for example, you grew a beard because of me.
Oh, here we go. Bro, listen, you had a wild, ugly beard before?
No, it wasn't wild.
You didn't trim it.
Hold on a second.
I didn't like it.
I'm the one that's the writer here, okay?
Now I like it.
It wasn't wild. It was
wild.
It was robust.
I don't know what that means, but it was wild.
That's why you don't know. That's what I'm saying. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You're using the word wild. You meant robust, bro. You don't know what robust means?
No, wild. It, it means wild?
No, it doesn't mean wild.
Well, same thing. You know what I mean?
No, but you grew a beard because of me, bro. Come on, admit it. I wish I would have had the pictures of you, like, sending me selfies of, like, your progress report. You know, I got the picture somewhere, man.
I didn't even want you to have a beard. You forgot because it was so out there and wild.
You didn't want to have a beard.
I didn't want you to have your beard because it was all wild until you tamed it down.
Well, when I first grew it.
Yeah.
When I first grew
it. You're like a Neanderthal.
I did. When I first grew it, I was trying to train my beard to grow. Didn't you notice that as soon as you started growing your beard, at first it was kind of weird, but then once it, like, you let it grow for, like, a couple of months, it like reaches its final form. Like, it learns to, like, know how to shape itself. Wouldn't you say that?
Yeah, you train every day, of course.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So, you know, when I first grew it, I wanted my body to get used to just growing that beard. You know what I mean? Remember when they were doing that when the Straight Outta Compton movie came out back in the day? And then people were doing, like, you can go on the Straight Outta Compton site and then you can get, like, a picture with the Straight Outta Compton logo, but then you could put whatever you wanted in there, straight out of whatever. You can straight out of Dearborn, straight out of Detroit, straight out of whatever. Well, I had one because my boy took a picture of me, Mike Hazimi. We were hanging out in Dearborn at that one place where you get, remember what? That place where they grill inside on Chase.
Oh, Dearborn Meat Market?
Dearborn Meat Market, which is fucking amazing. So we were in there in the wintertime. My beard was just like this fucking big because I let it grow and I didn't fucking like shave. It was just fucking all over the place. And then I would always like try to comb it, but then the comb would get stuck in it. So that's something I would just be like, you know how black guys leave the fucking, like, I would leave a comb in my fucking beard. I just walk around with that shit. So he took a picture of me. And the way the picture was, how big my beard was, I put on the thing Straight out of Razors. But that's how big it was. You're right. I now when I look back at those fucking pictures, I didn't know how to fade it. I was bald and it was like a straight line over here. It looked like a transformer. Like, you know, like I was just too straight, you know? So you're right. At first, it wasn't looking good. But then I started fucking picking up my beard game. This is one of the things with Tariq would be like, Tariq is like very fashionable. This motherfucker knows how to dress. As long as I've known him, you never look like a bum, bro. You know exactly how to dress. You have your own unique style.
It's natural.
It is. I'm feeding his ego. I'm trying to describe him, I'm feeding his fucking ego. And Tariq is a very, very fashionable motherfucker, man. Like, anytime I see him, he dresses in a way that is freaking amazing. It is. What the fuck was I just talking about? Before I started like complimenting you, the weed kicked in. The fuck was I just talking about? Son of a bitch.
Rewind it.
It's fucking live, bro. What the fuck was the point that I was trying to make? Tariq, are you even listening, bro?
Yeah, what were we talking about?
What the fuck are we talking about? I'm the one that smokes weed, bro. What are you doing not paying attention?
I'm paying attention.
Anyways, in terms of the fucking beard, man, he would call me with advice and be like, cuz, you got to shave your beard, cuz. No, I'm like, it just doesn't look good, you know? Like, cause like these motherfuckers that like, they grow a beard because their face is ugly. Wallah, you're a good looking guy. Show your face off. That's how he would get to me. Then every so often he hit me up. He's like, Khaye. Khaye means brother in Arabic. Khaye. Get rid of the beard, bro. It makes you look old. You know, all these fucking girls are going to look at you and be like, oh, who's this old man? Wallah, shave you. You're fucking young. I've seen you without it, bro. You look fucking young. You got a young face.
You're a good looking man.
You're a good looking man. This whole time I'm like, Tariq's trying to fuck me. Just ask for my number, bro. Anyways, and this is the best part. He rips on me for 3-4 years with the beard. And then one day, Tariq fucking hits me up. Hey, bro, what do you put in your beard? What type of products do you use? Like, when you let it grow, like, it's kind of like itchy. I don't like it. And then I'd hit him up. I'm like, what are you growing a beard? Yeah, cuz I'm giving it a shot. Like, and then I asked him for a picture. I'm like, Tariq, send me a picture. What does it look like? And you had like the stubble and you had like a wife beater and you're like in bed. Like, I don't know what the fuck you're doing.
It was just stubble, right?
It was like stubble. And your whole argument was like, cuz it's itchy. Well, it's itchy. I want to shave it. And I would have to convince you. Like, bro, you got to hold on. Yeah. It gets past a certain point where it doesn't get itchy anymore. It actually starts looking good. And that was it, bro. Now he wouldn't leave me alone. Like, every 2 or 3 days, this guy would send me progress reports on his beard. Hey, bro, how's it looking now? Hey, bro, what should I do now?
Hold on.
Out of nowhere, I'd be like hanging out with people, and then I was like, get a fucking text and it's a selfie with you. I'm like, hey, what was this? How's it look like from the side?
No, what about when you were getting ready to perform?
Yeah.
Before the performance.
Where was this at?
Somewhere in Detroit, you were getting ready to perform.
Yeah, you showed up to some show where I bombed.
I don't know, but I went back there. I was trying to get some beard advice. You're like, leave me alone.
You went to... So you didn't go to see me perform?
No, no, I did.
You went there for beard advice?
I went to see you perform, but I went back there to see you to get some beard advice.
Yeah. That's right. And before the show.
And you were pacing, like, leave me alone. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, I'm focused, bro. Like, before I go up, man, I like to really, like an athlete. I don't know, but you might be different. No, I mean, everyone's different. Everyone's different.
We're back. We joke around, relax.
Not for me, man. For me, before I go when on
the
show.
We walk to the ring, that's when it gets real serious.
For me, before I go on stage, I will go to the comedy club, right? I will set up my equipment first. My camera, my microphone shit, whatever. And then I try to talk to people. That's why I like to get there an hour and a half before the show. I'm one of the first comics that shows up. Because I got to get the social stuff out of the way first. Because it's not nice to be a comic and come in there and only be focused. I get there early, chat with this comic, chat with that comic, get fucking personal, whatever. 20 minutes before it's time for me to go up, boom, I'm gone. I'm looking at my set list. Every time I do my set list, I do a different set list. I don't know why I do that. I think I like to do that because I like the anxiety that I get before a show. I think the anxiety that I get before a show, not knowing exactly what my set list is going to be and figuring it out just before I go up there, makes it spontaneous. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Put the microphone in your thing.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. So like when I get out there, I have this level of freshness a little bit. Even though these jokes that I'm doing are jokes that I've done before, but sometimes the order and how I'm doing them and what I'm doing and maybe some things I'm throwing out, whatever, it keeps it fresh. So yeah. You try to get beard advice from me 20 minutes before a show. I'm a mean motherfucker. I'm going to get the fuck away from me, bro. Yeah. I've already did my social shit, you know? But everybody's different. Some comics, they don't even fucking prepare shit. They just come in, they hang out, blah, 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 and they get up and they bomb. No, I'm just joking. They don't. Some of them just get up there and they got it. But then other comics, like Anthony Jeselnik, who is like a huge fucking comic, you know? I performed with him at the Supernova Comedy in Hollywood. Even before I performed with him, it was nice to hang out backstage with him before he got up. He, every time, before he gets up, bro, he'll be sitting there watching the show. Then he pulls out this pristine piece of paper that he printed out. Printed, not written. Of exactly the jokes he's going to do before he goes on stage. He looks at it. It's got the date on it. He puts a date on it, which is very interesting.
Really?
I want to pick his brain to see, like, What's the significance of the date? You know what I mean? Because I don't do that. Like every time I go up on stage, this is exactly what I do. This is my routine. I go to the bartender. I go, can I get a napkin, a receipt, and a pen? Either napkin or receipt and a pen that I can borrow. And a tequila.
Why?
And they give me the tequila. Sit there at the fucking bar. Sip on my tequila. Pull out a pen. And on that paper, I write my set list. I ask the booker, how many minutes am I doing today? You're doing 10 minutes. You're doing 20. You're doing 35. Whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I got to go through all my jokes and see how can I fit within this allotted time that they give me the most amount of jokes. So to me, I have to prepare before I go up. Because if you only give me 10 minutes, bro, I'm going to squeeze every amount of that time. To me, it's very important not to waste the audience's time. You know, to me, when I get on stage, the audience's time is the most important thing to me. So if I only got 5 minutes, bro, I'm going to give you the most airtight 5 minutes you ever fucking saw. You know, so that's why, you know, I get like really like that. But you don't get like that at all, huh? So like if you go out boxing, we got to go back to the beard thing. Hold on a second. So you fucking like started growing a beard. This is the best thing, okay? Then he finally has this beard and he figures it out and it looks fucking amazing. And I don't know if you guys know, but I drive a blue Challenger.
Oh, God. And listen, then he's got a blue Challenger. I had a blue Maserati. He wants to make like, oh.
No. Hold on a second.
You got a blue Maserati. I got a beard. You got a beard.
You've never had a blue car since I've known you.
That wasn't a choice. It was the car that was available.
Yeah. To me, I love how he rips on me for growing a beard, tries to convince me to get rid of the beard. Then all of a sudden, I become the beard guru to teach him how to grow a beard. Then he grows a beard, and he's like, you know what else I'll do? I'm just going to get a same color car that is my, but about a different car, like it's a Maserati, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So me and you are like parallel universe versions of each other. Like, we're alternate universe versions of each other. It's like we're the same person, but on in different fucking universes. You're the flashy version. I'm the whatever fucking version.
Is flashy version good?
No.
I'm not that then. Okay.
Full of himself version, bro.
I'm not that.
Mm. Let's talk about Ed and Moe, man.
Yeah, I'm not full of, going back to full of myself, that's the last thing I am, is full of myself.
No, you're full of yourself.
You know I'm not.
But you do it in a very cute way.
Cute?
Well, you do. You do.
Not humble?
No, fuck no. How can you be full of yourself and be humble?
I'm not full of myself, man.
You're not full of yourself?
Not at all. I don't think I am.
Oh, you totally are.
You think I am.
Listen, man. You are and you aren't, but you really do exude someone who really cares about, like, how they look, how they're presented. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're really, but at the same time, you're not someone who's, when somebody says that they're full of themselves, that some people who are full of themselves, they have no love, right? They only care about themselves, period. You're not like that. You really do care about other people at the same time. But you also fucking love yourself a lot.
You know, I'm going to tell you this. I hope you love yourself.
I love myself a lot, bro.
We better all love ourselves.
Amen.
And I don't love myself more than somebody else loves themselves. We all love it. We got to love ourselves to a point and take care of ourselves. I don't try, bro.
You don't try?
I don't try.
I mean, you started the fucking podcast with Invisalign.
I just do what I gotta do. I don't try, bro.
You what?
I just do what I have to do.
I think this is who you are. That's the one thing that I do respect about Lebanese people. That's why, like, when other Arabs meet me, especially Lebanese people around the world, wherever I go, they assume I'm Lebanese. They do. They assume I'm Lebanese. Then when they find out I'm Yemeni, they're what?
Why do they assume Lebanese out of all the races?
I think because Lebanese people are very social, fashionable. Lebanese people love to go out. You know, that's one thing that I do respect. And one thing that I liked about growing up around Lebanese people, the one thing that Lebanese people have taught me, especially someone like you, the importance of working hard and playing hard. That's something that I see all the time amongst Lebanese people that I know. Whoever it is that I know, they work their asses off, but there comes a time of the day where they're like, hookah time.
Why, or I'm hanging out with the boys. The Yemeni culture doesn't do that?
No. No. Not at all.
Like work, work, work?
It's like work, work, work. Family, 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 family. I hate my family. I hate my family. I beat my kids, you know? Whereas like Lebanese people are just like, you know, work, 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 work. All right, I'm going to cheat on my wife now.
What the hell's wrong with you?
No, but that's the one thing I do respect about Lebanese people. You guys really do enjoy life. You guys enjoy life. You guys really do enjoy life. You guys work your asses off. But here's the thing. A lot of people will work their asses off, Tarek, and then they enjoy life at the end of their life, right? Or they work their asses off, and then they, up until they take whatever vacation, whenever they take it. What people don't understand, and what I learned from growing up in Dearborn amongst other Lebanese people, it's important to say, I'm done with the day, and now is the fucking time for me to fucking chill out. Now it's time for me to hang out with family. Now is the time for me to put the phone away, put the emails away, put the whatever away, and chill out with my friends and enjoy the fucking the rest of the day. It's healthy, I think, you know?
Of course.
And when you say a lot of people don't do that, did you, okay, so put the mic on your face. Wouldn't you say, do you notice that amongst Lebanese people, what I just said?
Well, I think, yeah, I do see that. You know, you gotta have your, but not many people do what you're saying.
What?
Work, 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 and that's it. You got to have the break. Who doesn't have a break?
And there's a lot of people that don't have healthy breaks. They'll come home and they'll watch TV. You know? Or they'll come home and they'll just stay. You know what I mean? Or they'll come home and work on something else. And then they're like, oh, I'll take the vacation when I'm ready to take a vacation. That's when my vacation will be. I just think that's unhealthy. I think it's very unhealthy. I think it's very important to take a certain time. Bro, there's a video online with Akon. I don't know if you've seen this, where Akon describes working with Eminem the first time that they collaborated on a song. You never seen this? It's fucking amazing.
Is it?
It really puts you in the perspective of how important it is to take time off. He said that the first time he went to the studio to work with Eminem, he got there at 6 o'clock in the evening. He's like, it's 6 o'clock in the evening, work all through the night, you know, on this track that we're working on.
Right.
He goes, he gets to the studio, he's excited to see Eminem. He gets there and he finds out Eminem's not there. And he's like, where's Em at? I'm like, oh, he left. So he calls up Eminem. He's like, hey, where you at, man? You coming back later? And I'm like, nah, I'm done. I'll be by tomorrow, though. What time? 9 o'clock. Akon's like, okay. So the next day, he decided to show up just before 9 o'clock. And he goes, Eminem shows up at the studio right at 9 o'clock. And he said that when Eminem came in, he treated it like a regular job. He worked from 9, and then all of a sudden 1 o'clock hit. And no matter what he was doing, even if he was in the middle of writing or whatever, 1 o'clock hit, he goes, all right, man, I'm taking lunch. You want to take lunch? And the guy's like, no, I think I'm going to work through lunch or whatever. He was like, all right, cool. Takes lunch. Exactly 1 hour later, boom, Eminem comes in. So timely. Works the rest of the way until 5 o'clock. And he goes, Eminem one time was mid-verse. Mid-verse, creating this new thing. 5 o'clock hits. All right, man, I'll see you. Akon's like, what the fuck? He's like, yeah, man. 5 o'clock, I'm over. Time to go home. Then after a while, Akon said he started talking to M, and M was like, you know what? No, I have to have a cutoff time. There's always tomorrow to work on it. So 5 o'clock happens. That motherfucker treats as a 9 to 5, and once 5 o'clock hits, I have to spend time with my family. I have to spend time with my friends. I have another life other than this. And that to me is fascinating, especially when you look at someone as prolific as Eminem.
I don't think he technically did what he said, what they're saying he did. I think they're using that more like a figure of speech, kind of like.
No, you got to see the video. I'll show you the video, how Akon like explains it to him on the radio station, and how Akon said that watching Eminem. Eminem work in this way inspired him to treat it the same way.
That's not a good way.
He goes, I would be at the studio for 3-4 days straight.
That's
not
a good
way
to treat it. I don't think it's a good way to treat it.
What's not a good way to treat it?
I don't think it's true. I don't think Eminem does that. I think that he said he did that, but I don't think it's true.
Because, this is coming from Akon dealing with Eminem. I love how you play the skeptic and you have nothing to fucking back it up.
I'm going to back it up right now.
Do it.
You're doing what you love to do.
You have Eminem's number? Let's call him.
You're doing what you love to do. All right? It's not a job. You don't treat it like a job. You don't want to treat it like a job. You won't want to. You working overtime, it feels good. That's your life. That's what you love to do. It's not a job that you're working on. It's not a 9-to-5 job per se where you don't like where you're going. And
that's what Akon says in the thing, because me as an artist, I'm the same fucking way. There's times where I'm in the creative process.
There's no off time, bro.
There's times where I'm in the creative process and I can't stop it.
Yeah, there's no time off, man. I don't believe in that. I'll cut it off. You know what? You might miss out on a lot of creative stuff.
Hold on a second. Everybody's different. Everybody's different. Their work ethic's different. Some people want to work 3 days in a fucking row and then take 2 days off. Sometimes I'll be doing that. Fucking straight up. I'll work three fucking days.
I think they're being sarcastic when they said, oh, he's in the middle of a verse.
You got to watch
it. Stop. Middle of a verse. Stop. Like, yeah, he was working. And he said, oh, yeah.
You know what? You're a fucking piece of shit. I want you to hear it. Do you want to hear it?
I don't want to hear it.
Oh, shit. Hold on. My electrician.
I don't want to hear it.
Fuck. Oh, he said yes, no problem. Okay. Sorry, guys. We're checking our phones right now. Don't mean to be rude. I just want to pull up that Akon thing because I know I sent it to a friend. And I want you to put these headphones on and I want you to listen to what he's fucking saying. It's only like a 3-minute video, bro.
I know he's going to say exactly what you just said, so I believe you.
But you're playing the whole fucking game like, oh, you know, he's being sarcastic. Get the fuck out of here, bro.
I'm in the middle of a sentence and I stopped on the letter B. And I stopped in the middle of the word, the letter B. I stopped. It's 5 o'clock.
Bro, it's not that fucking...
Exactly.
Oh, my God. Dude, you're too much, man. I don't even know
why. Let's go on to the next one.
Yeah, let's talk about Ed and Moe real quick before we end this shit.
Remember those guys?
Yeah, man. Let's talk about Ed and Moe, man, and how you felt doing that shit. If anybody doesn't know, edandmoeshow.com. It'll take you to the playlist of the 10 episodes that me and my friends did. We set out to do a fake reality show, basically a mockumentary comedy about a fat Arab Lebanese guy who's new to the country. And him and his white friend, Ed, who's a Wayrab.
Who's a wannabe Arab.
Who's a wannabe Arab. And who cannot stop dating Arab girls. Who's a white boy who grew up in a very shitty household. And he has a distorted view of the world. And in his mind, the best way to get a good girl in his life is to date a girl who comes from a very strict Arab family. That's who he gravitates to. Because he's like, well, you know, those girls are going to be like good girls. Yet the girls that he dates, we call them jumpers. Because the only way that he can like meet these girls is that he has to meet them out in the middle of the night and they have to jump out their windows to see him. Which actually did happen, you know, like, which I don't know how it is now. Like, things have loosened up. But back in the day, that's how it was, man. Like, these girls would have to jump out the window to like meet guys. So we created these two characters. And, you know, when we created Ed, we were like, hey, you know, Ed is obviously fucking around with a lot of Arab girls. And, you know, back in the day, if you were a white person or any guy trying to fuck with Arab girls, you're going to have to deal with the repercussions of their brothers jumping out of a bush mid blowjob, beating the fuck out of you. You know what I mean? This impending danger. You know how hard it is to focus on keeping your fucking dick hard, knowing that you're going to get your fucking head bashed in by Tariq Salamasi? So me and my writing partner, Mike McGetting, we were thinking about it. We were like, who would be the best bad guy that really would scare the fuck out of Ed? And we were like, bro, wouldn't it be amazing if it was Tariq Salamasi, the fucking boxer that we all fucking watched? Like, that's fucking scary. And then we were like, it would be fucking great, but would he fucking do it? And then I reached out to you. That was the first time we really, really met. The first time. We met before. We can talk about that shit. But this is the first time me and you actually sat down and got to know each other. And then you were like, fuck yeah, I'll do it, man. And what was crazy is when we did this show with Tariq, bro, you shined in it, man. You were like so fucking good. You were like a natural.
I was playing myself, bro.
Yeah, but some people can't play themselves. Some people, they try to play themselves and then they get in their heads and they don't execute naturally. You executed in such a natural way. You even came up with like some hilarious lines where you were like, I caught Ed with my cousin and she's supposed to be married to my other cousin. Yeah. And they're cousins too.
I don't know how I did that one. It just happened.
Because that's like, that's a very true thing with Arabs, you know? Like, they keep fucking each other's cousins, you know? Like, you go to the wedding and there's only one set of grandparents. Yeah, bro. So to me, it's like, yeah. So we got you on that. And how did you feel about that, bro? How'd you feel about that?
It was fun. It was a lot of fun. Good experience. My only complaint is that you didn't finish the
I didn't finish it to final, where you actually beat the fuck out of Ed.
People want to know.
Yeah.
People want to know.
Yeah, but it got to a point where I was doing the majority of the lifting. I did like 90% of the lifting of that show.
Yeah, I know that.
Especially the editing, sound design, sound sweetening, graphic design, motion graphic design, social media. Hey,
It got you a job in Hollywood.
It did, thanks to you.
You did the work, man.
Nah, bro. A lot of it was because of you, man. We did that show, the Ed and Moe show. You guys should definitely watch it. It's hilarious. It's got its flaws. Like, if I knew what I know now, I think I would definitely be doing some things differently on the show. You know, I think the second episode, we jumped the gun. We jumped the shark with that one because it was about their business. And then the second episode was like a throwaway episode where they were like sitting outside in front of their neighbor's Dave's house, who like invites these strippers over that deliver weed. Right. Was it back in the day when you really couldn't get weed delivered? We came up with this idea of delivering weed. Not only that, we came up with the idea of Postmates. That's what Ed and Mo Show was about. Ed and Mo Show were these two fucking losers that were like, hey, we got this new business. We call it We Get It. You call us and we get it. Whatever you want, we'll get it. Which is really funny, man. Like we predicted a Postmates. But then having you on there was great. And I think that you were such a natural in it, bro. And the good thing is that like you're of this celebrity status, but you're so humble to be like, fuck yeah, let's do it. And you put your trust in me. And then when I started releasing the episodes, one thing that felt good was you really liked the quality of it.
You did a good job, man. You really, really good.
You were kind of impressed. You were like, oh shit. Like, you know, I was like trying to make it like a real TV show. And if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have got that job on Swamp People, bro.
So you produced there for how long?
Swamp People? I think 3.5 years.
Then you got sick of it?
And then I went to Indonesia and I took a lot of mushrooms and I met God and God told me to go to comedy.
There you go.
Yeah. You know?
I'll give you credit for that though, honestly.
What?
Just dropping everything and going to comedy the way you did.
It was Indonesia, man.
Change of career is very hard. What's even harder is that you're doing something that's not easy, going on stage in front of people.
I think that's so amazing that people really still think that it's not easy to do stand-up. You know, I think it's not easy to box. That's not easy, bro. Like, standing on stage, talking to people. Now, it's not just talking. Like, you're crafting jokes and trying to get people to induce a laugh, right? Which is not easy. But I think the thing that people say not easy is people are afraid of public speaking.
Yeah, delivery.
But right. I think a lot of people are scared of public speaking, though. Are you scared of public speaking?
I mean, not really. I'm not afraid of, I don't get nervous in front of the public if I speak, but something like that, it's about more about being nervous about your delivery and getting your
like if you were on stage reaction. If you were on stage for 1 hour, could you do that, just talking?
Depends what the topic is. But when you're delivering a joke, it's different. You're talking about comedians delivering a joke. You got to get that response.
That's really interesting, bro.
It's about delivery.
To me, what blows me away is there's a lot of times where I'll come off a stage. Last time was in Austin. And a musician will come on the stage afterwards. So we did this whole comedy show in Austin. And then afterwards, it was going to be a band that was going to come and play. And they were setting up. And this happens a lot. And I'm very humbled when I hear this because I think musicians are amazing. But a lot of them will come out and be like, you know, like this guy was like, let's give a hand for all the comics that you've seen. You know, he's like, I think it's amazing that these people can come up on stage and entertain a full room with just their voice. And he's like, you know, for me, it's like, I can't entertain you without this guitar and this entire band. To me, I'm the opposite. I find it as that's amazing. I can't pick up an instrument and do this with my fingers and make fucking music come out of it. So it's like really funny how the grass is greener on the other side. You know, I appreciate doing stand up and I get it, but I'm really humbled when people look at it like, whoa, that's like an amazing thing. Cause I don't look at it like that.
Yeah. You didn't do it when you were younger, growing up doing it. You did it like, well, you were 40
way
years old.
Later.
Yeah,
40.
It's not easy.
I just turned 40, I think is when I did it. You know, but I was doing comedy before that, though. I was doing the Ed and Mo show. Before that, I was doing improv at the Second City. Before that, I was doing improv and comedic acting at the Planet Ant Theater. Plus, I was like doing a lot of comedic acting on stage plays and like movies and commercials and shit like that. So I like comedy was my thing. And then like when I went to Indonesia and took all those mushrooms and I met her, God's a woman, bro. And like she literally told me, go back to comedy, but before that, go back to Detroit and invest in more real estate and then go back to comedy. But she didn't tell me go to stand up. So in my mind, I was like, I'm going to do improv. So I went back and I did improv in LA, but I realized it was so hard to get people to commit at the level I wanted to commit. I wanted to fucking go out every other day. And with improv, you can't do it unless you have other people with you. That's what got me into stand-up. It was an accident. All of a sudden, I decided, I was like, you know what? If I'm going to do comedy, I might as well do something where I can only rely on myself.
Stand-up comedy.
So I did stand-up comedy, and then, like, it really clicked, bro. Like, right away, it clicked, you know? Which is really interesting. which is why everyone should do mushrooms in Indonesia.
So look at, so stand-up comedy, you'd say right now, is your passion?
I'm hooked.
Okay.
Fucking hooked,
so
bro.
So do you think that you being hooked has anything to do with your upbringing and how much money you had?
I didn't have much money growing up.
I'm saying, do you think that your...
You my dad was pretty...
I said, do you think how you feel about it has anything to do with how much money you had growing up, whether you had money or not? Do you think that has anything to do with how you feel about comedy?
I think that my drive to make shit happen comes from not having shit.
You may think that.
I do think that.
The people with money who have drive.
Because even though now I've like invested smart and I, as a single guy, I'm not rich, right? But I have enough money that for a single guy, I'm like, yo, you know, if like, if you looked at me in my 20s and told me how much I would have in my account now, I'd be like, what? I would just give up. I would just give up. That's how I would look at it. But I think that that comfort of having security with money and capital hasn't really weakened me in the way that it could have if I gotten that money much younger, or if I was raised with it. If I was raised with the money, I don't think that my drive would be as much.
Yeah, you'd be bored. You'd be looking for the next. You'd be looking for something else to drive you. And maybe that comedy would have, same thing. You'd have
or
felt the same
like
way.
Killing people. You know, like once you get to that.
You would have still did the comedy. My point is,
I don't know about
how much
that,
money
man.
You have growing up doesn't determine whether you're going to succeed or not in a certain sport. Or
no, that doesn't determine that at all. What determines you, making it to the next level is having drive and discipline, right? But a lot of people that grow up rich don't have the parents to teach them the discipline while they have the money.
Well, you're talking about people who grew up spoiled. That's different.
True. It's not but people who have money are more susceptible to being spoiled. If you're poor, you have no choice but to want something better because there's no one's going to give it to you. Not your mom, not your cousin. No one in your family can lend you money. Then it fucking creates this drive where you're like, fuck, I need to do something. That's why ugly men are rich. You know what I'm saying? That's why I like very pretty girls. That's why when you do yoga at 6 in the morning in fucking L.A., at 6 in the morning, there ain't no hot girls in there, bro. Ain't no hot girl doing yoga 6 in the fucking morning. It's the woman that just had 3 kids trying to get rid of her fupa. Some fucking like fat guy, you know, some people who just like try to do it because they got like get up real fucking early. No girl that's super hot. You want to see hot girls at yoga? You go to the 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock p.m. fucking yoga. That's when you're going to see the hot girls. And guess what? They just woke up. They ain't got to get up for shit.
It's funny.
But it's true. It's very true. So I do believe that growing up poor would really give you more of a drive to be a fucking better person or like.
Well, it helps. It helps.
And being ugly too is another thing. Look at this, bro. I've ever since a kid, I've always looked at myself. I'm like, man, you're not that good looking. I've always did that. Like ever since a kid, I've always very insecure about my fucking looks, man. And I think a lot of it is because the white standards of beauty. And not only that, you had Lebanese people that I grew up with who were more fair skinned and they called me the N-word. I grew up having Lebanese people calling me the N-word.
You look like Franco Harris from Pittsburgh Steelers 1977.
Yeah, I know. You told me like Franco Harris.
Have you seen
him yet? But to me, it's like I really like was worried about like how I looked and stuff. And I think that people who kind of don't have that natural standard of beauty typically are like charismatic. Like you get to a point where you're like, I don't have the looks to woo a girl, but if I can make her laugh, you know, if I can make her, you know, give her and her friends a good time, have charisma, make them feel comfortable around me, it's a totally different thing. So like I think that people who lack certain things for the most part develop bigger, better skills, man. And typically people who have looks or have money a lot of the times don't have those skills or that drive because everything was handed to him, bro. You can't tell me Pacquiao would be the fighter that he was if he didn't grow up as poor as he did. Same thing with Mayweather.
Being poor, of course, you want that. It gives you that drive to want to succeed. Of course, you're poor.
That's what I'm saying.
But it doesn't make you a better athlete or better at what you're doing.
Listen.
They have more drive. If you love something, you can have
listen.
Drive.
I get it, but I really do feel when you get to a point where you don't have no choice but to make this thing work, to get out of this fucking shit that you're in, the drive is on another level,
well,
bro.
That, yeah,
it's on another
I agree,
level.
I agree with that. I
it's on another
I
level.
I agree with that.
So then I made my point.
The person still, whatever they're doing, that's what they love to do. Whether you're
I
rich,
get that. Listen,
whether you're rich or poor, if you love what you're doing to death, they're going to do good. Okay. They want it, they're going to do
you
it.
You can love what
otherwise,
you do.
Otherwise, all these guys that are multimillionaires now, their careers be over. They're still winning.
No, but see, that's why you're missing the point that I said earlier. The point that I said earlier was is that if you grow up in your most formidable years where it's going to actually turn you into the human being that you're going to be as you're growing up, because as you're growing up, your body's like really setting yourself up for your adult life. If you grew up poor and always looking up and wanting better, by the time you become an adult, that's going to carry on even after you have millions. Look at Conor McGregor. You know, sure, he lost the last few fights, but that motherfucker's still grinding trying to fight. He's got so much money. He's a $500 million, bro. And that's probably why he lost his last three fights. If you notice, like, Conor McGregor is not angry Conor McGregor anymore. Now, after fights, he's all like fucking, like, he's Buddhist and shit, doing the pray hands. The fuck is that shit?
That's funny.
Anyways, bro, we're 2 hours in.
Ready?
Can you believe that? 2 hours and 47 minutes.
We didn't talk about the good stuff.
What do we got to talk about? Let's try to do another 15 minutes, bro. I like to keep this at 2 hours. We can go longer, but what are you looking at?
My text message.
Mm.
You make a phone call.
Look at my text and messages. All right, all right.
Hold on one second.
Oh, fuck. Come on, man. We can't be both on our phones. The fuck? Hmm. Yeah, bro. So, are you going to fucking pay attention or what?
Go ahead, listen.
What's the good stuff? What do we got to talk about?
You going back to L.A.?
That's the good stuff? This is what we're talking about? If I'm going back to L.A.? Of course I'm going back to L.A. I live there.
Tomorrow, right?
Yeah, tomorrow. Tomorrow. This weekend I got a couple of guest set shows in San Diego. San Diego.
When San Diego?
Friday and Saturday. Yeah.
Are you doing anything next week in LA?
You going back to LA, right? Nice. Next week.
Sunday.
Oh, you go back Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Let me see. What am I doing next week? I don't think I have much shows going on, man. I've been like trying to keep the shows light. Yeah, I'm pretty open next week, man. Except I got a show on the weekend at the Palm Desert. But other than that, man, I'm open, bro. We should get Korean barbecue. Have you ever had Korean barbecue?
Not there, no.
Yeah, because you're too busy looking at the goddamn pools, bro. Bro, we should probably end this. Unless there's another thing you want to talk
done.
About.
Done is done.
Are you done?
We're done.
I think we're done, bro. We talked for about 2 hours. We didn't talk about how mad you were that I took a shit in your house.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ishak took a shit in my bathroom.
And it was a stinker.
Let me tell you something. We're not in the country here. He lived too far from here. He could have went and used the bathroom at home. Instead, he goes, hey, you got a bathroom? He didn't tell me why. I just assumed it was number one. That's the assumption you're going to make. Because who's going to shit in your house?
I mean, come on, there, bro. Who's going to shit
waiting,
in your house?
And I was waiting and waiting. And I was like, oh.
I asked you if I could use the bathroom. You didn't give me the rule.
I started thinking to myself. I go, oh, no. Is he shitting? No way. Is he shitting? No way. It took long. I was like, oh, God. Is he, oh, man. Then I heard him all of a sudden flush. Then I heard him still in there.
I was finishing up an email.
He's still in there. I'm like, what's going on? Oh, damn it. God, no, he did not just. The biggest peeve of mine is shitting in other people's homes.
Hey, put the microphone to your face, bro.
One of the biggest peeves of mine is shitting in my home.
Then tell people. If I got to use your bathroom,
if
tell me.
If you don't live 20 miles away, If you got to live at least 20 miles away. If you live 20 miles away, you better go to your house.
Listen. Today was one of those days where whatever I ate yesterday has got me shitting in increments, like all throughout the day. Usually I have like one or two movements throughout the day. But this one here, bro, because I was checking out my rental properties, bro, I fucking dropped deuces in Home Depot, Lowe's, and two of my rental properties, and one of them has people in there.
In my house. In my house.
So, hey, man, more people just showed up before we were about to take off. Hey, my buddy asks, and some questions that appear. Looking around real quick, I just want to see. Does Tariq do any charity work with boxing for the boxing ring that they set up back in the day? It's one of the questions.
Boxing ring.
Have you done any charity work with boxing at all?
No, I've done other charity work for different organizations, different charities, but nothing. There's nothing for boxing per se. I mean, there's organizations out there that are helping fighters who are struggling these days and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, you.
We're doing it to that.
Oh yeah, they're like struggling in what way?
Man, a lot of these boxers that people grew up watching.
Yeah.
Who maybe they looked up to and they were fans of.
Yeah.
They have no idea what's going on today. A lot of like people what? Have. CTE.
I kind of figured that was going to be
homeless.
Homeless.
Alcoholism. All that stuff, man.
Wow.
You'd be surprised.
There's a lot of trauma that happens with boxers from getting hit.
Yeah, you know what, man? Boxing.
Hey, you never been knocked out, have you?
No, but I never had a concussion, thank God. But it's a contact sport, so there's be dangers involved. And all contact sports have your dangerous. But boxing, it all depends on you as an individual, how you take punishment. Just because somebody gets hit with I'm going to give you an example.
Okay.
Off topic.
Okay.
Some guys smoke till they're 90 years old and they're fine.
Yeah.
Some people smoke till they're 40 and they get cancer.
It's a case-by-case basis.
Everybody reacts differently to whatever it is, whether drugs, punishment, boxing.
So getting guys, hit in the head, whatever.
You see people on the street, some guys will get in a car accident, a truck went over their head, they're fine. Another guy taps his head, he's dead. Same thing with boxing. Everybody takes punishment differently. Some guys,
don't touch the mic like with your hands.
Some guys been hit plenty of times and they're fine. You got others that didn't get hit that much and they're a little slow.
Yeah.
They have CTE.
Yeah.
It's sad. And as time goes on, it gets worse for them.
Fuck. Yeah, you know,
a lot of it comes from guys not quitting on time, not retiring on time. They stay in too long because they don't have anything else to do.
It's the ego also.
That's part of it too. Ego, being in the limelight, a way to make money. When you start doing it just for the money, that's where it goes bad.
Yeah.
You know, sadly.
So you work with a lot of organizations that.
No, there's one organization that I'm dealing with. They Ring 12. They donate to the boxers, but other than that, there's no other organizations that I know of.
Some guy just had a question. His name is Bish Bash Potato Priest. He goes, I just want to say I'm from Masjid Mutha. Muath?
Okay.
Do you know anything about that? What's this guy here?
What did he say? He's from that and?
That's it. That's all he said. He goes, I just want to say I'm from Masjid Muath.
Masjid, like a mosque.
Like a mosque. Muath. You know what's funny, bro? You want to talk about something that's really funny? Speaking of something like this, I went to Greenwood, Indiana to do a show at a place called Gutty's. Okay? This place is like the Chuck E. Cheese of comedy. You're doing comedy for all age ranges. Kids.
Really?
Old people. So it has to be clean comedy. It's one of those places, right? Soon as I walk into the bar, into the club, the owner's father was by the door and he's a wisecracking guy. You know, he's like an old wisecracking guy. He's like missing an eye. And he goes, oh, you're Mike Ishak, huh? And then he goes, where are your wings? Basically saying that, you know, a lot of people are talking good things about you. You're like an angel. You're like, you know, whatever. He goes, where are your wings? I go, wings? I go, bro, I'm from hell. That's what I told him. As soon as I said that, my phone rings. I pick up my phone and I go, hello? Salamu alaikum, my brother. My name is Ahmed Abdullah with the Organization of Islamic Quran Teaching. Would you like to learn the Quran today? I hung up on him. I was like, what the fuck is that, bro?
You said that.
But the timing, yeah, yeah. The timing of him, me telling him, no, I'm the devil. I'm not an angel. I'm the devil.
Yeah, that phone call.
And then I get that fucking phone call. I'm like,
it's a sign, bro.
Shut the fuck up.
It's a sign.
I don't believe in that shit.
It's a sign.
I don't believe in that.
You need to get religious.
You're not religious.
So I have a sign. You got the sign. Listen. Religious.
You never got the sign?
Do your thing.
You never got the sign?
No sign for you. No sign.
Eat bacon then. See, I'm eating bacon. I got the sign and I'm still eating bacon.
I don't like to eat bacon. You know I don't like to eat bacon.
Why don't you like eating bacon? You're not my dad.
It don't matter. I don't like it. That's kind of thing.
This is the thing I don't like about Muslims.
It's something you can avoid.
Policing each other.
There's something
you can... It's like, oh, you're cheating on your wife? All right, cool. But why are you eating bacon, cuz?
Yeah, it's something you can avoid.
You can avoid... People can avoid cheating on their wives.
Some people can't.
True. Just like I can't avoid eating bacon, cuz. Bacon is amazing.
Salty.
What's worse? Being married and fornicating or being Muslim and eating bacon? I'm going to give you a second. I should have the Jeopardy theme. Ding, 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 boom, boom. What's your answer?
What's the guy? What's the host's name again? Alex Trebek.
Alex Trebek, yeah.
Best way, guys.
Yeah.
I'm going to say equal, Alex.
Bah, wrong. You're a loser.
Equal.
Equal what?
They're both equal.
They're not.
Eating bacon and fornicating, same thing.
That is not the
they're
same
both sins.
Thing. Fornicating on your spouse or wife or husband, whoever it is worse than nourishing your body with healthy fats and protein.
Says who?
Says science.
They don't say science. They don't say that pork is good for you.
Yeah, but that's because the Quran was written before they knew the world wasn't flat.
To this day, they say pork is bad for you.
To this day, they say that's not bad for you. Who says it's bad for you?
The doctors.
Muslims, Muslim doctors, Muslim. No. Muslim and Jewish doctors. That's what it is. The Jews and the Muslims got it wrong, people. They got it wrong. Anyways, we should end this podcast. We should end this podcast. Is there anything else you want to say, Tariq, to the people?
God bless you, and one love to everyone.
God bless you, one love to everyone. You want to follow Tariq at Tariq Salamasi. It's right there on the screen. I love this guy, really.
I love you too.
That was gay.
God bless you.
You said it with eye contact. I didn't. That was weird.
Oh, okay, hold on. I love you too.
That's perfect. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I love you too.
Yeah. Well, I love you, bro.
I love you too.
I love you so much, man. The ceiling. Anyways. All right, guys. Oh, somebody else. The only... Okay, this is the religious guy who talked that said that he was from Masjid Muath. I think he's coming down hard on us.
What did he say?
The only time to eat pork is when you don't have food at all or you are forced to eat it. This guy, you know, so like, basically what he's saying is I have to go to Guantanamo Bay and get tortured for terrorism to eat bacon. That's fucked up, Bish Bash. Bish Bash. That's what I grew up on. I grew up on the whole, like, you could eat. I remember when they told me you couldn't eat pork. My parents were like, but if you were starving in the desert and there was nothing else to eat.
You can eat it.
You can eat it. And then my other question was like, what the fuck is a pig doing in the middle of the desert? That's how smart I am. I'm not fucking playing that game, bro. Come on, man. You mean to tell me that religion has got people to be more concerned about nourishing themselves with a food, but nobody's telling these Arabs and Muslims to stop smoking cigarettes? True. The majority of people who smoke cigarettes are in the Middle East. Why? Because it's not in the Quran. So if it's not in the Quran, it's not a sin. Illi. What's illi mean?
Tell me.
Tell me.
Ellie.
He put Ellie and put two eyeballs. Ellie. Anyways, guys, follow me if you guys are on this at Mike from Detroit. I'm Mike from Detroit on everything. Instagram, Twitter, Pornhub, YouPorn. I'm on that bitch, bro, almost every night. Find me on those. And also find me online at so like I do these live, and then after it's live, I put up the audio version on Apple Podcast. It comes out on Spotify, Stitcher, anywhere you can get your podcasts. But if you're on Apple, please rate me 5 stars. Leave me a review, because the Apple Podcast directory is the directory that's the most important one. So the faster I rise in that, the better. I would appreciate it. I love you guys. You guys are fucking awesome. I love the guys that tune into this every week. I'm trying to keep this thing growing. Give it up for Tariq Salamasi. I got an applause button here. Yeah. And I'll see you guys next time. Mike from Detroit, follow me. Love you.
Public Yemeni number 1.